Call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors.
You'd all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation, Juergens, Dorn, Bauman, Lytle, Byers, and Setzer. I guess Adams. I forgot to say Adams on that one. So, consent agenda. First thing on the agenda is the general agenda. Approve minutes of meeting held February 9th. Approve all claims through February 23rd in the amount of $381,810.85. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve caretakers for the Pioneer Cemeteries of Gage County for 2011 season. Approve reappointing Jeff Frakes for another term to the Planning and Zoning Board.
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, but I just have a question about the first number five.
Oh. I don't know. Why she's... I can't answer that one. I wasn't on that one. She's double duty in her fives, I guess. I have to ask Michelle on that one.
Do you want to make a correction for item six, then, to add?
So then item...
Oh, wait a minute. You were really questioning the...
I honestly want to know just who's our caretakers.
We have different individuals. Some Boy Scouts that take care of Charles Barr is the Evangelical Lutheran, the Southwest History Preservation Association does Pleasant Hill and Reserve Cemetery, and Boy Scout Troop 221 does, there's like 10 cemeteries here. I can pass it around. And let's see, Teresa Faber does the Stark Cemetery.
X amount of dollars. What are the dollars?
They get the maximum the statute allows. I think it's 500 now. That's the maximum that they can have.
Each provider or total?
For each cemetery.
Each cemetery.
But that's the total that they can get.
And those are our, we have to do that. Those are our responsibility.
Okay. Yes, by statute.
Okay.
Any more discussion on the consent agenda?
I don't have a second yet, I don't think.
No, there's no second.
No second. Need a second.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Any more discussion?
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good?
I just want to see.
Vote. 7-0. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items? Mark Mainz, you're up on your annual report.
Good morning.
How are you?
How are you?
Good. I have my annual report to present to you today, and each of you should have a copy of that. Each of you should have your new name tags that we had made for you. I know you all enjoyed the pictures, so I'll let you figure out where we got the pictures from.
That's what I was wondering.
They're actually from your driver's license, so... I just start out and did an annual report here for the year 2010, introduced my staff again, myself, of course, as a director, Sam Stevens. Sam is present today with me here. He's a deputy director. Mark Jobin's a deputy director. Mark lives south of Beatrice, works for Beatrice Community Hospital. And David Niemeyer is another part-time director. David is the lives up by Cortland and has been a fire chief up there for almost 30 years. Rick and Julie Cookus is our volunteer community emergency response team coordinators. Wade Ostrich does our volunteer communications officer. And, of course, we have Sean Wise, who is our Homeland Security exercise training officer for the region. His salary, wages, expenses, mileage, et cetera, is reimbursed by Homeland Security. He has the 14 counties basically in our southeast NACO district that he's responsible for. Next couple of pages, just our contact information in case you need to get a hold of us. Our goals and responsibilities, those are the next pages. On page four, just so you know, the Nebraska Emergency Management Act, it does require each county to have an emergency manager, and each county shall have a current local emergency operations plan. Some counties have emergency managers that, like myself. Some counties go by regions, and they have multiple counties per one emergency manager. I think one emergency manager in the state actually has six or seven counties, which are the smaller counties out west. Goes through on the end of page four and of page five, kind of when we get called, basically requested by an agency during emergency or disaster, weather-related information, mutual aid requests, mass casualty, mass fatality incidences, hazmat spills, releases, wide area searches, any type of radio communications issues, the 911 mapping, questions on that, or if we have to update that, and request for public education programs, which we do quite a few. We average at least one, if not two, a month, and during severe weather, there's quite often that we get lots more requests than that. So we've already got some booked into July, some requests for education programs. Of course, the Emergency Operations Center is downstairs, my office, which is nice to have where I'm in that day-to-day to make sure that is ready to be operated if needed. That is where the county board would come, the chairman or a designee, if we did have some type of disaster in the county where we all needed to meet, would be in my office downstairs. Some of the resources that we have available, have a list here. Also shows a couple pictures. The Suburban that is fully equipped, just added a repeater system into that. It has a generator in it, radio systems to talk to all the counties and states around us. We have a repeater system, like I said, just installed. We keep our satellite telephone in there. So then we have a pickup that we use to pull our trailers with. We also have another Chevy pickup that the Buildings and Grounds, Dave Jones, uses on a day-to-day basis. Our mass casualty unit, which is an old ambulance that the sheriff's office had, Durango that's kept in Wymore, enclosed response trailers again, and the Gator with the med bed is kept in one of those enclosed trailers that's behind the sheriff's office. The next page just kind of shows the inside of one of the trailers, and sometime if you'd like to see some of those resources, take a better look at them, just get a hold of one of us and we can take you around to them. There's page nine, basically the communication systems. We have 15 locations throughout the county, one at the Lancaster County Power Plant, but we are moving that into a new tower that's going in across from the Hallam Fire Plant, Fire Department. That tower is supposed to be done and completed by September, so we'll be moving our equipment out of the power plant. The problem with the power plant right now is it runs about 110 degrees year-round in there, so I've had to replace that system twice in the last 10 years because of the extended heat. So we're also working with the Paraclete system. That's part of the new statewide communication system. You've seen the governor come out and break that out this last couple of months, and that the Paraclete system will be able to make us interoperable with all the statewide communication systems. That's taken quite a bit of my time, is working on the communication systems and how we're going to interact with that, with our county into the state system. One thing I'm paying close attention to, that they're asking us to put a piece of equipment in our county. With that, I want to make sure that what it's going to cost us to retain that equipment and keep it operating. So I don't want to put in a piece of equipment that's going to cost me $10,000 a year. You know, I'm not sure it's not going to cost that, but I want to make sure, you know, where we're going to get the funding to cover that equipment that the state's requiring us to put in our county. Our warning sirens, we have 25 altogether total, and we have a grant right now, and the money's in my budget. Soon we have a grant that was approved. We've been working on that grant for over a year with SEND, and we're every couple of days we send her more information. So hopefully one of these days we'll get that money approved. That'll be a 25% match, so out of a $40,000 grant, we'll have to pay the $10,000 for replace the sirens in Philly and Virginia. Our other facilities on page 10 are the Blue Springs Communications Tower. Now we have a 420-foot guided tower that was purchased from Charter Communications for $1 several years ago, I think about 6 years ago anyway. It's in pretty good shape yet. We just painted it a couple years ago. Have some problems with the lighting system on it we're still working on. We also have a tornado shelter that's located in Hoyle's Trailer Park that we're responsible for. It has a generator in it, and Sam takes care of that at Hoyle's Trailer Park for me and make sure the generator stays up and propane stays in the tanks and such. So
where is that in the park, Mark?
You go in the first driveway, turn down and go to the east, and about halfway down, if you look back in between all the mobile homes, there's a, it looks like a little buried Quonset. So you can't really see it, but just a concrete. If you follow the sidewalk there, when the new power plant was built, that company came in and put all new sidewalks to it for us. So
how do people in the area know it's there?
We've told everybody pretty much at the trailer park knows, and then we've told the businesses in the area, like Board of Public Works and those buildings, those facilities know. It'll hold, I think, about 120 is what it is, I think, something like that.
Okay. For some reason, so, I didn't even know we had one
yeah.
there.
It was paid for by Project Impact. It wasn't completed when I come on board, and so I had to kind of dig out some history on it, and it was a toss-up who actually it belonged to. They wanted to try to give it to Hoyles, and he didn't want nothing to do with it, so we kind of acquired it through the Project Impact grant.
That might be a good thing for the news media to take a look at all of our shelters around the county and do a public interest piece to let people know where they are. I think that would be very
good. The only other one we have that's designated as a tornado shelter, we used to have a list of, when I come on board, there was a list of 25. I went out and contacted these people that were on that list, and they don't want nothing to do anymore because their insurance companies don't want them people inviting people into their building anymore. Sure. And some of the buildings weren't even the list I had. Some of the buildings have been tore down. That tornado shelter and then the tornado shelter that was paid for with hazard mitigation money in Cortland is a public shelter also. And there was signage up there for that one along the highway. It got removed, and we just need to work on getting that probably. I just noticed the other day it was gone. So, but it's a public shelter, and a gentleman across the street from that takes care of that and opens it up during storms and stuff for us. So,
if we as public officials are aware where those are, probably the general public might not be able
to. We usually do an article for Severe Weather Awareness Week and on the radio that we go out and talk, so we'll bring them up. So.
Good.
I just explained a little bit ago Sean's position. Sean Wise, our regional exercise training officer, kind of goes through this, the next page. A lot of our time is spent on our regional aspect now. We go to, it seems like, 2-3 meetings a month. We travel to these regions. We stay within our counties. For the regional meetings, they're all under Open Meetings Act, so we have to follow that. We work plans together, communications planning, funding. And the last couple of pages there's some colored page that tells you how much funding we do have available on a regional level. If you get time, take a look at that. If you have any questions, give me a call. It shows our region on page 12. Homeland Security grants is all done through regional. Prior to this regional concept, we were pretty fortunate in Gage County to receive over $1 million in Homeland Security grants. That's what a lot of that resources and equipment was paid for, all the way down to, had some departments buy all kinds of different equipment. So communications equipment, replace some old equipment and such. My funding, of course, on page 13, the Emergency Management Performance Grant, EMPG, as you'll hear it called. It's based upon the performance of my agency. This year, the total amount received back will be $51,000. That's the most we've received. Next year, I'm hoping to get a little bit more. Other funding, of course, my county budget, and then local grants, we go and try to take a look at any kind of local grants we can to help with that. 14 is the calls for service, the 911 addressing, completed 39 new 911 addresses, and we continue to work on that. One thing I want to just touch a minute is that we need to get a policy written how we're going to address those signs from now on and the replacement and such, and I think the committee, I've got some ideas, and the committee can get together and we'll get that done. Weather-related events last year was a little slower than the year before. We had 30 weather-related events in Gage County. Federal disasters, last year we had 2 weather-related federal disasters. That would be number 1878, which was a severe winter storm and snowstorms, and number 1902 was severe storms, ice jams, and flooding. Both of those are still open. We're still doing work and paperwork on that to get the money back. Last year we were designated, it actually fell back to 2009, but it was awarded last year. We are again received accreditation from the National Weather Service for being a storm-ready county. It doesn't keep storms out of the county, but it does better prepare us and helps prepare the public for that. It's kind of nice. I was the fourth county in the state to receive that accreditation. Now there's 16 counties, 5 communities. Cabela's is actually a storm-ready commercial site, and then off at Air Force Base. So, hazmat calls, we had 72 health hazard-related calls that did last year. Those could be anything from a little gas spill at the gas station to a release at the one of the anhydrous facilities. Beatrice Fire and Rescue, we receive a $25,000 grant every year that I have to write. Assist them in writing a plan for, and then I refund it, so the Finance Committee sees some of that coming through for that. Tier 2 reporting, which is facilities that have to require to report chemicals and reported quantity chemicals. We have 47 Tier 2 facilities in Gage County. Just a comparison of 47 in our county, Jefferson County has 17. So we have 30 more hazardous sites in our county. LAPC, our local emergency planning committee that we attend, it's a tri-county now, and we do quarterly meetings, whether monthly meetings, and all three counties get together. We are looking at adding Fillmore and Thayer County in that also, but we do meet on a quarterly basis, and those are advertised also meetings. And then a list of my projects that I did last year. I won't go over every one of them. The picture there is the new helipad at Big Indian Lake. It's getting ready to reopen this year, all redone, and the helipad has been used once already, so and it did work. It goes through our Citizen Corps grants on page 20. That's where we distributed last year in September. We had a community preparedness for Senior Citizens Day at Watkins Ace Hardware, where we got the grant of $7,000 to distribute 500 disaster kits for senior citizens. And our community response team, CERT team, we still utilize them when we can. We're going to kind of revamp that program this year. Our SEMRs, we have meetings. There's meetings today, as a matter of fact. This is where we're working with MMRS, which is Metropolitan Medical Resource Systems for hospitals and medical care EMS providers. We do training, plans, procedures, and exercises with them. And then, of course, we kind of revamped the whole safety committee this last year, and I think we're doing really good. We just concluded the CPR and first aid AED training for the highway department, and the courthouse, we just did CPR and AED training. That's concluded. So then there's some other activities. One of the big things that's coming up this year is the on the last on page 23, you see a picture of the statewide fourth grade severe weather awareness poster contest. We every year for the past 8 years, except for one of those years, I've had a person placed in the top three positions of that. 1 year I had two people from our county. So last year we had Megan Ellie Moore of Blue Springs, got to go to the governor and get her certificate and poster handed to her. She got third place. So again, the last couple pages, like I said, is our grants on the regional basis. And then if you wanted to know a little bit more about the LAPC or Local Emergency Planning Committee, I added a little frequently asked questions on that. So.
Okay. Any questions?
The new statewide system, how close is that to being done, or what's the funding? I mean, or how much does it cost us, I guess?
Well, everything we're going to be purchasing in the county is going to be purchased under Homeland Security money through our regional grants. It looks like, you know, we're going to be adding some stuff at the 911 center. We're going to be putting some stuff on a tower that we NETV tower. They just put up a brand new one. A car had hit it, and they put up a new one on the county line on 136. That's the piece of equipment that it's a repeater system that we're going to be responsible for. They haven't given me any figures yet. We're not going to have to buy it. It's just that we're going to have to maintain it. So, you know, the electricity won't cost us nothing because it's through there. But if something happens to it later on, we're still trying to decide who's going to be responsible. I don't see a lot of expense for that on a local level for us. We're going to have to be doing some reprogramming and stuff in our cars. some of the ambulances, some of the fire trucks will have to have that done. I'm hoping to have that all done, though, at the same time when we're switching over to our narrow banding. So we're trying to make that a whole one big smooth project, so we're not out there having to reprogramming radios two or three times. But I don't see a lot of expense for us in the piece that they're putting in here. Now, some of the counties are going to be receiving microwave systems. That's going to take, you know, quite a bit more maintenance, and we're not going to be getting that piece. So, but we have to sign an agreement, and so I'll bring that to the board. So I'll be totally upfront when we come with the agreement that says this is what we estimate it's going to cost. I won't just agree to do that unless I bring it to the board. Because I think that's the biggest concern of all of us emergency managers is the state's telling us, well, you got to have this piece of equipment in your county, and then, but by the way, we're not going to help you maintain it. Well, that's not right, you know. And so, as long as the Homeland Security grants are there, the maintenance agreements will be there. If they go away in a couple of years, then we're going to be responsible for it. So, the system that's up and running right now only affects state and federal agencies until we get down to the local levels. I look in the next year we should be totally up and running, probably the next 8 to 9 months, actually. So I'll be bringing some stuff back from our region to the board for that. So.
Okay. Any other questions? Need a motion to put it on file. Thank you, Ryan.
Okay, thank you.
Moved by Bauman, seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Marlin, you're up.
Seemed like I brought a lot of paper today, so. First thing on my report, the NPZA conference coming up end of March, 1st of April. I'm planning on attending. I'm, I guess, wondering about taking the administrative assistant, too. She does some of the zoning. She's getting a little more into the permits, but she's not real comfortable yet. And that's coming up later on next month, and there is enough in the line items on that for rooms and registration yet. Then moving on to the agenda.
Hold on, Marlon.
Yeah. What was this again? Is this conference different than is this the NDOR one we're talking about?
No. That's the NPZA. That's zoning. That's Nebraska Planning and Zoning Association.
Which will be where?
I think it's in Grand Island.
Where?
Grand Island.
Thanks.
Oh, okay.
Okay, moving on down the agenda, we have approve or disapprove a resolution directing the highway superintendent make a report on possible road vacate. In your packet, there's a copy of a resolution that has the legal on it that was put on by the E-Energy Adams. Behind that's a map. And it's the green area on that map that they're wanting vacated now. And I think Mr. Drack's here for any questions or.
Okay. Hey, Marlon, before we get in that resolution, I think you went past the zoning so fast. I don't think you can accept that as that it's okay until we have some discussion. Some understanding on it. Did Road and Bridge, were you aware of the PNZ conference?
This is different than the one I think we were talking
okay.
about.
Okay, so do not take that as an okay.
I think I brought it up last meeting, too, but, yeah, I can.
Okay, so I just wanted to touch on that. That doesn't mean it has approval yet. We will discuss it, and then we can put it on next meeting to a vote one way or the other. I think with your budget, your line item, you may have it in your line item, but your whole budget is suffering, so. Just because it's in that line item doesn't mean it may not have to be moved over to another item. Okay, over to your resolution.
It's in your packet, like I said, and it's up near the ethanol plant. It's a new alignment of South 134th Road. And, of course, we got to do an agreement with the railroad and the state on the crossing if that's the route you guys want to go. But this is just for me to do the study on that area.
I would make a motion to approve directing Highway Superintendent to make a report on possible road vacate.
Study only, correct?
Yep.
Okay, moved by Bauman, seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Myron.
No, it was seconded. I was.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
May I address?
Yes.
And I'm Dave Jaretsky. I'm an attorney with Crosby Gunzel. And with me today is Andrew Johansson of E-Energy. And I thank you for allowing me to speak. I only want to clarify possible questions or concerns that the board may have. Both Roger and Marlon have been very helpful in this process, and admittedly there's no exact blueprint for how to do this, so it's been a bit convoluted. I just want to clarify one issue that could be cumbersome. As Marlon just stated, the petition to close the road is that segment of 134th, and I think that's identified in your board packet. However, I think the agenda item is broader than that, and I would ask this board to at least consider that there's two other pieces here that E-Energy will need to complete this project. The other two pieces are not at least active roads. Old 134 is an abandoned road, not formally abandoned, but at least the road used to be there, obviously, until the road was moved as a result of the E-Energy project. I don't think, again, as Roger and I have spoken, I don't know that it takes a study necessarily to determine that there's no traffic on an abandoned road, but nonetheless, in terms of your resolution, again, when I view the agenda item, I think it's broad enough to encompass moving forward to understand that old piece of 134, at least the west side, and I'll clarify that if I may, there's a Norris electrical line on the east side of that abandoned road. The west side is just vacant. To have sufficient room for E-Energy to add these two tracks, they'll need part of that, just the west side of that old 134, and part of a triangular piece, if you will. We're not asking for any modification where the paved road is of your actual road. And again, Marlon and I have spoken. I think there's plenty of room for the necessary right-of-way that the county needs there, but you frankly have excess property. And that will revert to the underlying fee title owner, which is not E-Energy presently. It is Gary Cruzzi, or at least his family. And E-Energy has already entered negotiations with Mr. Cruzzi to purchase that in the event that the county surrenders or releases its easement as to that property. So there's two other issues that are, I just want to make certain that the board understands, that are out there in terms of the big picture. But in terms of the mechanics of this, I think, again, Marlon needs to study, if you will, 134th Road, the active 134th Road, to see what kind of traffic will be impacted, because obviously there is traffic on that, or again, there is no traffic on the other right-of-way pieces, but in moving forward, we'd like to, as you move forward towards a public hearing and the consideration of these pieces, it's all three pieces that are necessary for E-Energy's purposes. Did I add any clarity to that or confusion to that? Is the map cleared? Does everyone understand? They're colored on mine, and I would gladly help identify those if there's any confusion.
I've got a question. I don't know, once you bring up the electric line or the electric poles and everything, and I don't know, you know, vacating this or if the old highway or not, what happens to the right-of-way for the electric poles or nothing?
Well, that'd be one of the things we'd have to probably leave. I doubt it. North probably, if somebody wants to move the poles,
yeah,
that's a whole disaster for everybody to work on. So
right.
What we've been looking at is if we can vacate part of that road.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it wasn't done whenever Marlon did some checking on the history. We don't know exactly. I don't have a date on that, but it was just kind of left alone because that easement was out there for North.
It's the old one, old 134.
Yeah, that on your map, it's that blue. It's the little pink area just to the top side of that blue area. That's the old alignment, and then they're going to need some of that blue area, which is easement that the county through the TIF bought for when we put that concrete road in.
Correct.
And again, Mr. Dorn, to clarify your question, I happen to represent North Public Power District, which is an interesting coincidence in this, but Norris's position is the line is on the east half of that old roadbed, and so to the extent the county only abandons its interest in the west half, the section line, if you will, it won't interfere with the Norris line. Alternatively, if you were to abandon everything, obviously Norris would have to take steps to reestablish its easement, which it could do, but to the extent we can only abandon the west half, hopefully it would be the least complicated.
Okay. Any more questions? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, you need a motion to approve or disapprove Resolution 1105 directing the highway superintendent to do a road study. Okay, we have a Bauman and Lytle. So any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve.
The next thing I have is approve or disapprove specification and call for bids for spring rock and gravel. Here's three copies of the specs. I moved the date back to like August 15th on it because of budgetary problems. We discussed it at Road and Bridge Friday, and basically I got the specs ready according to that, and we'll do the bid letting on March 23rd if the specs are approved.
Are the specs like always?
The specs are identical except for the dates.
Okay.
It's okay with Road and Bridge?
Okay.
Yes. You guys can see those? Make a motion to approve specs and call for bids for spring rock and gravel.
Moved by Bauman, seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve.
The next thing I had on is discuss Highway Department 4-10-hour working days for summer 2011. In your packet, on the first page, I have some points on it. I know one of the issues was holidays, and in talking with Nancy, we could manage that with an 8-hour float if that, you know, holiday ends up on Friday or Monday. And then require using 2 hours of vacation or comp time if it comes during the week. That way it'd be all equal with everybody else as far as holiday pay. And the other issues, I had Nancy check back. There was 5 permits applied for on a Friday last summer in 6.5 months, and now they're online on the Gage County Highway website. So there's, I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Discussion?
I'll start off.
Okay.
Well, you'll get as many opinions as you probably get people in a room. my main thing is it's a public office. My opinion is it needs to be open 5 days a week as much as we can to service the public. That's 6 permits that those people would have had to file on a different day. I think we did have good discussion, and Terry can speak to that, about if there's a project going on, the effort tends to go out an extra day. If you're on project, you can work an extra hour. And I've visited with other folks who convert to 10-hour days and do construction as well. So I would concur there's probably some validity there. My big concern is it's a public office, and we've all been made aware that when a public office closes on a Friday, it's always an inconvenience. It's never looked on as being very well. So I think that's part of the service and the bureaucracy of what we're providing. So my main thing is that at least there's office open there so that if the public wants to come in, there are servants to the public, they're available.
Okay. And Kathy?
I totally agree with Matt. I think possibly the argument could be made that it's more efficient for the like the road crews and things to work 10-hour days and possibly like in the hauling, but as far as the office, I believe it definitely needs to be open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday.
Okay, I'll give my stance. I believe the construction people should be 4-10s. I understand that. Administratively, I believe they need to be there 5 days a week. So Any more discussion?
Makes for pretty long days for the, if there's one there on Friday. Because you know, what happens is some of the township guys come in, like to stand there and visit some of the employees. I don't know, you know.
Are you implying we're overstaffed?
No,
that they
I'm
can't
not.
Keep busy?
I'm not implying that at all.
What would constitute a long day if there's work to be done, regardless of what day it is?
And the issue with, you know, like one of them basically dispatches a truck rock, and for the contractors also, you know, and basically that happens right away in the morning. And the same with the administrative assistant, too, that does time, does the insurance, does all the billing, and or not billing, but all the vendor claims, does all that. You know, the guys are in there right away in the morning, and then they're gone. And, you know, that always makes it a little harder for them. But
I don't know how that applies to Friday. If everyone else is working 4/10s, why would they be in on Friday morning?
Some of them just like to stop and visit.
They need to be instructed not to. If they're employees, if they're township people, maybe you can't do that, but...
Well, I think that's Fridays would be a great opportunity. You know, we see the increased administrative workload on you and the more paperwork that you have, and not to mention the change in payroll. I would think that Friday would be a great day to get everything buttoned up and do some of that paperwork outside of, you know, having to deal with the crews and their needs like that. And also the township folks to come in and, you know, that, again, that's part of it is public service, and conversations are just part of it. As trivial as at times they may seem, those are good conversations to have to build those relationships. So I would see that as a Friday. It's a great paper day, if nothing else.
Okay. Any more discussion? Okay. Marlon, P&Z fees.
Yeah. Lisa's here to discuss them. The Planning Commission did a lot of work on them. So.
These are the fees also. Just another bunch of... Sorry, it's not Save a Tree Day. You asked us as a commission to go ahead and visit those fees, and that's what we did a couple weeks ago. If I could just address a little bit the P&Z conference that you talked about to Marlon. We have had members attend that conference. In fact, that's a good working relationship that we have. A lot of our new members don't quite understand zoning in the beginning, and so that gives them the option if they want to attend. Last year we addressed wind power. Those conferences helped us write those regs. In the past, subdivisions before that were the main concern in past years. Not every member goes. Marlon has gone in the past, but on the average, we have usually two members that can get away for a day. We have several conferences going on. Meetings are going on at the same time, so we split up is what we do and attend different work sessions. So that just addresses zoning a little bit and pertaining to writing different regs and working with different land uses. What I gave you before... is our worksheets that we used. Gage County's, the top one with the yellow highlight area is the current fees on one side and what we're suggesting review on. We also included the spreadsheets that we compiled by the commission. We read through about 25 different regulations and looked at different fees and what other counties were doing. So hopefully that'll help you address that issue too. Lancaster County is also in my packet. Those are kind of hard to understand. They've got a lot of different areas to it, but obviously with the area and the demographics, they have addressed almost everything there. There's also a copy of the resolution that was adopted back in October 2003. Just keep in mind that when we set zoning up, we set the standards as to how we utilize the land, and so our permits are based upon land use, not specifically building permits, but the way it changes the demographics of the land. So step one, obviously, is the permit has to come into to Marlin's office, and then that has to be assessed as how does that change the land use map, and also what things have to be done in terms of the roads, requirements, permitting, and that sort of thing. So we did look at that. If you'll just turn to the second page at the top where it's blue highlighted, and then I also highlighted Gage County, just to give you a general consensus. When someone comes in, it's an agricultural building, for instance, somebody's putting up a pole shed, those permits, due to state statutes back in 1999, the state set up statutes that kind of fostered the state's agriculture, and so they made, through zoning, agricultural buildings exempt. That doesn't mean that they don't pay an administrative fee. Right now they're paying that $25 fee, which takes care of, you know, the administrative things that may need to be done, and that's something that you can look at if we don't have that high enough. But as far as if it's a farm and it more than $1,000 is generated from production in farm economy and it rests on 20 acres or more, that is agricultural exempt by state statutes. So a general permit coming in, we have a flat fee of $25, and then it's based upon $3 per thousand of estimated valuation. Now, that's at the time when the application comes in, and for such as a house, for instance, if you go back to the permits, the list of permits in 2010, and go down to a house that was built, that's where you base that upon that house. Like about 12 names down, you'll see that a house came in at $148,000. That was based upon square footage, again, what the application's plan came in to Marlin, and then that $3 per thousand. That's what you guys set back in 2003. So in terms, yeah.
That was a little later, and that's in the packet I gave you. There's the zoning, present zoning fees plus that motion by the board to add that $100 per square foot.
Yes.
Evaluation. Sorry.
Nope, that's great. So that addresses the general permits. Ag permits, anything that new comes in, that permit still has to pay the $25. Administration, Marlin, still goes out and inspects that area. Special use permits with hearing, we set, our setting is at $150. And then if you compare that with conditional use permit, one thing that I just want to clarify, when zoning came in, different counties utilized a different system in terms of definitions. So a special use permit to some counties that requires a hearing may be the same as what a conditional use permit is. In our county, Marlin can go out and set specific conditions, like, okay, even though setback is at 75 foot, you're only at 60 foot, you need to make sure you move that back 15, you know, foot. So that's a condition that he places on that, not requiring that special hearing. So as you compare through the spreadsheet, just to clarify a little bit, it's saying the same thing what other counties are doing. Signs, kennels, septic repair, and lagoon, these are things that we do, but other counties, you'll see, are pretty limited. A sign, any kind of sign that goes up, we were charging $15. A kennel coming in, $15. Septic, those you will find now because of the timing that back in 2003, every septic lagoon and so forth requires DEQ permitting. So a lot of that is being double permitted. So late fees, if someone comes in and forgets to apply, we have a $50 late fee, and you'll see some differences in other counties. Subdivisions is something, when you compare other counties to us, less than three partials, for instance, do not require a hearing, but more than that requires a special use permit, so that's covered there. So what we're suggesting on page one, an amendment which requires a hearing. Right now, amendments were set at $50. Back in 2003, we were still working with the transitional, with our land use map, and we knew there was areas that we might have missed. And so we're suggesting that, since it requires a hearing, any change to the land use map requires a hearing. So our suggested review is that we move that, bump that up to $150. Appeals to the Board of Variance, we left alone. We have not had a variance issue come in, has it been 2 years almost?
I don't know if we had one. I don't think we had one last
year. We didn't have one last year. Yeah, so it doesn't seem to be an issue right now. Zoning seems to be working. The current, as far as development permits, we are suggesting the review is that we leave those alone. Again, as you look through, you'll find that most of them go with flat fees, and Gage County is on the very high side, actually, of that. Since, again, we were dealing with the way it changes the use of the land. So special use permit, we're leaving alone at $150. When you get into the sign issue itself, we left at $15. However, perhaps maybe that's one area that you want to look at, administrative $25 flat fee and be done. The kennels, septic, and so forth, we elected to review it as just omitting it, just because if these individuals come in, not only are they being double required by DEQ permits, but if they come in, a new construction is usually included in the new construction of a home. So most generally when that plan comes in, the lagoon system or the septic is included in there. And when Marlin places the inspection, he's looking at the DEQ permit anyway. And so... as far as late fees, we're electing still to leave that alone. When we got into towers, which includes cell and wind, we addressed the cell towers in the regs about four months ago, and we talked a little bit about how the fees would be assessed if a wind farm does happen to come to Gage County. And so those will be assessed in nameplate capacity rate. As far as the initial cost, for the permitting process, what we're asking is that, suggesting, I should say, is $500 per tower. So a good, for instance, is most of these towers that might be coming to Gage County that are being proposed, their total value could be well over right at $1 million. And so if you place $1 million valuation at $1,000, you know, or $3 per thousand value, you're going to be looking at most of just the permitting fees coming in for one tower, right around that, you know, $3,200. So obviously when we go back to the wind reg side of it, we are going to be approving the whole site. So if a farm comes in, we're going to be approving more than one turbine at a time. So that's why we placed it at $500. But keep in mind the revenue that you still have coming back from that, from each tower on a yearly basis will be assessed a fee, a nameplate capacity fee rate, which is, I think, like $3,200 per megawatt of production. So potentially a large amount of income coming in on a yearly basis if it does come to Gage County. So as far as subdivisions, we're adding subdivisions, you know, their own area, whereas three parcels or less doesn't require a whole lot, so we left that alone. But then subdivisions are falling into that special use permit. So one thing that we did find, which was kind of amazing after talking and researching all the counties, is most counties said that they could keep their permits pretty low because they multitask. They're doing like what we do in our county, whereas we have it within another office. So they could keep their costs down. If you look at our budget and then compare it, on the last page on the permitting, we had $5.5 million come in, total valuation. We brought in $14,513 in fees. Our board is volunteer except for mileage, and most of my members aren't putting in their mileage. It's just something they're electing to give back to the county. I think that whenever they go to a PNZ conference, they are turning that mileage in. But this year we were using some of the budget money because we had to redo the comp plan, and that's every 10 years now. So we're okay on that, so budget-wise. Questions?
Well, I guess I can start it off. I personally would like to see the sign fee up because the mileage alone, we can't drive to one end to the other for the $15 to look at a sign. The late fees, I would like to see that go to 100. Subdivisions and subdivision special use, that is where we've had our issues. That's where we've had our problems and concerns. That's been something we've talked about for a while, is that the coordination of the townships, all the multiple trips back and forth to those, I believe that should be increased. And I guess I'm uncomfortable with how we set the valuations for our issuing fee. When you look in here and you have a new basement, a new garage, and the value is assessed at $20,000, we all know the garage was probably $20,000, and let alone the basement. So I'm uncomfortable with those, how we come up with an accurate assessment, you know, Marshall Swift, whatever we choose to use. Mm-hmm. We need to improve on that end of it, maybe more than even the fee structure itself. Maybe that the fee structure is superficial if we improve on where we're at on the actual valuations.
Yeah.
We did get comparables from the assessor's office on square footage. An average home was running about 98. A good home, one story, 119. And a good home, a story and a half, like, was 124 per square foot. We didn't bring that information along, I think.
I have a copy of that.
And also on the towers, in our regulations, we allow a personal wind generator on a, like a farmstead or whatever. We're allowing that under a permit if they meet the conditions. That don't require any hearing or anything, and that's assessed at $3 per thousand. Plus a $25 application fee also. And that's per the new regulations that we just adopted several months ago.
Do we use the assessor when we get a permit to compare the valuation that they give you?
Well, I mean, like that we have, you know, kind of, and I know when that $100 a square foot was set, it was, I don't remember what it was.
'03.
Well, yeah. The $100 was done in 2006 or something like that. It's in the behind the March 15th, 2006. You know, I guess setting the value, you know, we're getting closer than we were at first. We just take their word for it. You know, at the meeting, you know, we discussed bumping that up a little, but, you know, when you have an average home, and how do we know an average home from a good home before they build it, you know?
Most generally, and if I can, when they first step, utilizing, looking at the land use itself, when they come in, they're not certain what kind of aesthetics, you know, they're going to put it, if they're going to attach a patio, those things, you know, they're just seeing if it's going to be permissible in the permitting process. So things are added
along. Things change as they go.
Exactly. So, they do.
But it's like anything. If we don't discuss it and take action periodically, we fall so far behind. So I think the discussions are appropriate. I think you guys did a good job on looking at it. So
for you to review.
Yeah, and that's what we need to do. Any questions?
When do we do something with it or don't, or what, or not?
2 weeks to a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some other time then.
Yeah.
And then that takes a hearing then, too?
That's just a resolution, board resolution.
That's just a resolution.
Resolution vote.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you.
The next thing I have is discuss that two-day NDR bridge conference. We have four inspectors.
Marlon, I need to interrupt you. The 9:30 public hearing for the purpose of the 1 in 6 year.
Oh, okay.
So we need to do that. So we'll call.
Make a motion to open up a public hearing.
Yep.
To hear support, opposition, or criticism of the 1 in 6 year proposed highway improvement plan for Gage County.
Okay. Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. If we have a sign-up sheet available, if anyone wants to talk about the 1 in 6 year plan, please sign up over there.
Oh, no, I got one.
Marlon, we'll get a sheet somewhere.
I got
somebody
one.
Wants to talk.
I got one here.
Yep. About March 23rd for the planning and zoning page.
Oh, in your packet on the second page, I have 2011 1 and 6 information. And according to discussion at Road and Bridge and stuff, and there's a vacate petition to vacate that road between section 34 and 33 of Hanover Township, so we're deleting that project. There was a closed bridge on that road. Then the other projects that we're adding on this year, C-34-989 is North 36 Hanover. There's some 36-inch tubes there and overtops frequently. North 18 Blakely, 30-inch tubes. It's tops cut out and runs over there quite a bit. And then we got several bridges that either have the substructure, the piling or the substructure back wall bad, and they're going to need some serious work, and we're trying to get some of them to size for tubes. We've sent them all in to the engineers. So then on the armor coating is the last one on there. You can see the roads we're doing. There's 9.8 total miles. We already let the contract for that. With the oil prices the way they are now, it's probably a good thing. That was locked in when we did our last armor coating. Any questions? Galen came up to help. He's got more information on any of them bridges if you need them.
Any questions? Myron.
The one down there at Liberty, is that right north of Liberty? You closed the road there this past week. Is that something to do with that or not? Or
No, and I have that in my report. Maybe I went over it. Yeah. That's east of 27 Island Grove. That's one where we had an accident on. We had to close it. It's not a project. The insurance company for the gentleman that ran into it is going to pay for repairing it. We're trying to get it engineered. Once we fix it, the consultant or an engineer agrees with it, and then he'll reload rate it, and then we can open it. So, but no, that ain't the one. That's a timber bridge on down there at East 33 Liberty.
Just for the benefit of everyone here, Marlon, Road and Bridge, you discussed it. Road and Bridge, are you comfortable with the 1 and 6 year plan? Enough detail in there to understand where the projects are? And was there any additions that you chose to add that were not? I mean, just so everyone's aware of it, what was discussed is on here, and there was some in-depth discussion in Road and Bridge on it. Any public want to address on the 1 and 6 year plan? Need a motion to close the public hearing. You're done on that, aren't you, Marlon?
Yep.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 7-0. Need a motion to approve or disapprove resolution 1106 approving the 1 and 6 year plan.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Okay, Marlon, back to your...
Stick around for this bridge inspection thing.
Yeah, the bridge inspection.
Yeah, like I said, we got 4 inspectors. We have 324 state-sized bridges. It seems like a lot of them are on yearly schedules. The good ones are on 2-year schedules. Basically, the flyer for that... Nebraska Bridge Conference is in your second page to the last in your packet. You know, there's a lot of work anymore on these bridges, you know, on the inspections, on the all the scour critical. We got to do a plan of actions. We got to do, all the entering and the filing on them. When we had that temporary co-op worker, we got a new filing or updated all our files, had them put in order. There was, they were in so many different drawers, so we got that looking pretty good. But there's a lot of reporting and coordinating pictures with these bridges, and it's just anyway, any questions about that? And Galen can put a little light on the inspections and stuff too. So.
Are you talking about the conference, the NDO?
Yeah.
How many? What was the cost? I asked you to.
No cost for the conference. We'd have rooms involved.
Rooms, and I just looked, training and registration. There's like $800 left in there. Is that correct?
Yeah.
We had a discussion at Road and Bridge, and we'd probably just kind of have to wrap up here at the end of the year, training and stuff like that. And this might be one of the last things we have money to go to at this point. So we had money budgeted for that to go. So I think we figured $80 a night and then $25 a day of food or something like that. Sometimes they feed you at those things. I don't know. Maybe you can take some back to your restaurant. So I guess I don't have.
We had discussion there, and I think we unanimously said, you know, we thought it would be a good deal to go ahead and go. So for everybody else, we thought it was fine.
Myron? But Marlon, just for some of them that aren't on the road bridge, how many people were you taking with you to this conference?
Well, we have four inspectors and an administrative assistant, one that does the PONUS program and the filing with NDR and coordinates the inspection, basically prints out all the inspection forms and pictures, puts them together, and that's part of what they're covering there is the PONUS training and updating. And then, of course, I'm the manager of the whole thing, so, yeah.
Okay. Kathy, go ahead.
Is this one day or?
2 days.
2 days, so it'd be two nights or?
I'm assuming one night because we can, it's in Kearney, I think we can drive out early in the morning.
I personally in favor of the bridge training. That's something the state has cracked real hard on, so. I suppose we need it on approve or disapprove next agenda, don't we? Yeah, since it's a discussion item, we'll put it on the next agenda, Marlon, to approve or disapprove. Okay, what else, Marlon?
All right, I covered that east of 27 Island Grove, or that's the one on Virginia Liberty Road. Going down to the cruise, the Claytonia Barnes. Pretty well done. We're trying to get, we talked to the county surveyor. He's going to survey the lot in Philly so we can figure out where to put the water lines and stuff. So then the asphalt crew's been blowing and sealing cracks whenever they have a chance. When the weather ain't permittable, they're cutting trees around bridges that came in off inspection where there's either trees growing under the bridge or near the wing or somewhere. So we're having them do that. Dirt crew's been starting on a few projects, cleaning out box culverts and stuff. So that's pretty well it. Any questions?
What else? That's it. Okay.
Thanks, Galen.
AmeriCom is not going to show, I guess. So approve or disapprove appointment of Walter Gardner, M.D., to fill the vacant position.
Dave has the information.
Dave has the information. As the physician representative to the Public Health Solutions District Board of Health.
So move.
Moved by Byers. Second by Bauman. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Dave, you want to touch on AmeriCom?
Morning. Dave Jones, custodian. I did invite Trevor Kinnett from AmeriCom to come down today. Unfortunately, I left him a voicemail. He left me a voicemail back. I think we might have got our wires crossed there. What we were going to talk about was getting an upgrade on our current phone system through Windstream. AmeriCom said they could make this changeover at a cost of about $2,000 for a card and a switchover cost. and I'm going to read what he wrote here. He put, I would estimate around a $350 a month minimum in savings by switching to the new service from Windstream. I think once it is all said and done, we can get that closer to $450 to $500 savings per month. So it would be an upgrade of our existing system that would save our monthly bills. The clerk's office did send the phone bills up to America.
Dave, you know me. I'm kind of old school. Just because he's telling us we're going to save it, is he putting it in writing that the bare minimum we will get the $300?
I would like for him to be here to tell us that.
I would like to have him tell us that also.
I think what has happened, we had this discussion before. I needed to order a new block of DID numbers. Over the years, we had a phone here and a phone there throughout the extension office, the county barn, Blue Rivers, and over a couple years' time, we use up all those DID circuits. So I was going to order another block of circuits, and that's when he brought this up again, saying that he thought that we need to go through our phone system, clean it up. And
Actually, I talked to him some of that to start that, and Dave is short on lines. So we're going to have to purchase something anyhow, a block for more lines, because we're out of lines. And he indicated to me, and then that's kind of when Dave got involved, indicated to me that this new system will actually be more storm-proof or, you know, lightning damage. It won't be as susceptible. So,
right.
And then he got into the fees and stuff like
right.
that. So
right. He hasn't brought this up before. He always referred to it as cleaning up the system, that mm-hmm. we could get a better price from Windstream if we did do this. He just wrote, this is a much better pricing than we had received back from last summer. The service would replace all of the individual CO lines as well as DID circuits and provide a much better service at a lower rate monthly. You will keep all existing phone numbers, gain more access, as well as caller ID on all the calls. So, again, if you would like, I could invite them down next week for discussion and maybe to approve or disapprove at that time.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, there's not a timeline to get this done. Obviously, if the implied savings is $350 a month.
Right. There's not. The only thing I was going to do is when I was going to order those DID circuits for additional phones, we would move forward with that, but otherwise there's no immediate rush on this.
Okay. Yeah, I invite him down.
Okay. And I apologize. I think he was planning on coming. We might have gotten the date wrong or something on that. So, okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Davey. Approve or disapprove change order number one for the lower level north windows replacement and waterproofing.
Okay. Wim, did you want to speak to that? Good.
You want me to make a motion?
Yeah, make a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the change order number one for the lower level window replacement water.
Okay.
Second.
Moved by Bauman, second by Byers. Wynn, your dialogue on it.
Good morning. I'm Wynn Kirsten, for everybody that's new, with Berger and Architects. During our building and grounds meeting on Friday, we discussed how to address additional cost that was incurred on the north side window replacement. A brief history on the larger number. Right at the time that we were in the process of the south windows going in, and right before we were going to open bids on the north window project, it was decided that we were going to install drain tile and a cistern to collect that water in the yard. And so we didn't add that drain tile and cistern work to the bid numbers because we were right there and it would have just confused the issue. We decided we'd handle it as we did with the south window project, and that was to have it come out of building and grounds maintenance budget. One thing we ran into, it was more of a clerical thing on the south on the south window project, was by adding that to building and grounds budget, there wasn't a good paper trail. The folder was getting thicker than it needed to be. And we could have added that by change order to the south side, decided not to. When we were digging out this north side, it was discovered that on the original building there was a concrete stair that provided access to the old janitor's quarters right below us. And when this was all redone in the 60s, 70s, they just bulldozed dirt over that whole concrete stair assembly. And so when they started their trenching for the drain tile work, well, here they discovered this. So we had them remove it, of course. It was, you know, deteriorated, was in the way. So we had it removed. That's our $900 number here in item one. When that came up, and we were discussing it, like I said, Friday, how to pay for that, it was, again, I think, coming out of building and grounds budget. But now we had two separate items that were going to be not attached to the project contractually. So what we decided to do, and obviously we still have the option to leave it out, but what we decided we thought would make more sense as you go back in 10, 20 years and try to figure out how that was all done, we thought that we'd take those two items that we have on the north side, combine them into this change order so that when we get pay requests from the contractor, there's a line item there that shows on that pay request and in the contract that that work was added to the project. And it can still be paid through any budget that you like, but it's just more of a paperwork administrative, may make it simple down the road to keep track of where all this went. So that's where this resulted from, to put this together.
Committee felt comfortable with this as we had our discussion, felt this was the most transparent way to handle it, and Matt reviewed the budget with us relative to the dollars, and so I'm supportive of this.
Can I speak to the two different projects? One of the things I think to remember, and some of the board members weren't here yet, is that when they bid the North project, the group that did that, I think, was half of what the group that bid the South project, those windows were. So I think that was interesting to see, you know, this cost, though it is an additional expense that we hadn't planned on. We've got to do something with the water. Who knew that stuff was dug underneath there? But it's still, I think, Cheever's was, I think, twice as much as this group that actually got the bid for the north end of the windows, I believe. I think we were kind of taken back at the price difference.
When the bids came out for the north side, I think all of us were a little surprised that Cheever's
that one was so much, if it could be done so. But
right.
Anyway, that's just a little where we had been in the past.
Okay. Any more discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve. Thank you, Wim.
Thank you all.
Discuss updates to employee manual. Matt?
I guess I'll speak on behalf of the Human Resource and Employee Relations Committee. We met, golly, I don't remember what day that was, 2 weeks ago, something like that. And we had kind of the thing that we spent the most time on was to clarify the change in the employee manual specific to the grievance procedure. There was some discussion. I know I've had several phone calls from different county employees that are under the direction of the county board wanting to know exactly what that meant and how that was going to be. So myself and Kathy and Terry met, and I know Gary's on the committee as well. And so basically, late yesterday afternoon, I had a conversation with Jerry Pigsley, and he goes through and reviews this. And you'll see, you probably got two of them. Pay attention to the one that says, that's got Jerry's name in the top right-hand corner. Dawn was very diligent, but she didn't know that at 5:30 last night there were still conversations being had. So I don't know why you just couldn't pull that out of thin air. At any rate, you'll see what is struck through there would be the omissions that the committee discussed. In the yellow, you will see the additions, and that goes through the entire document there of the grievance procedure and then the discipline and discharge as well. This, respectively, page 11, 12, 39, and 40 of the employee manual. Basically, the grievance board is no longer in existence.
the way that it was before. The Board of Supervisors will act as the grievance board for the employees that answer to the Board of Supervisors. There is recourse, say, if we have a department head with multiple employees underneath them. The concern that I received was that what if one of those employees wanted to grieve something? The implication that there was no grievance procedure was that person was out of luck, there was no process. The board recognized, or the committee recognized, we wanted to allow due process so people could be heard. So how that would work is that employee would appeal to their, and it's spelled out in the procedure, they would appeal to their direct supervisor, and then they would appeal, if need be, to the Board of Supervisors acting as the grievance board. So read through that. This was, I think it was good conversation. The goal was to continue to have a process in place. It wasn't to do away with it completely. Hopefully this will clarify any questions that folks have. I know I visited with Roger about this, and the goal would be to make this available once it's cleaned up. It's in kind of a draft format now. We wanted just to discuss it, to get some input here. In a couple weeks, then we'll try to add it to the employee manual. So if there's any, read through it. I realize this is probably the first time a lot of folks have seen this. So read through it and ask any questions that you have. I stepped through it with Roger briefly today. He's had it for a couple of days and spoke with Jerry late yesterday afternoon. So, and the other thing I think from the employee manual standpoint is I think Kathy, she caught a typo or something that was in there. So
there's just a couple things that I think need a little clarification or cleaning up. On page 17 under work hours, the last or second to last sentence there, due to the nature of our organization and in order to meet the needs of our citizens, it may be necessary to work at times or on days other than those listed above are at the elected official department head's discretion. It needs to be, I believe it should be listed above, period. These changes are at the elected officials. And I'll let you have this if you want. And then on page 30, under military leave, the last paragraph, which is section A, if the period of service in the uniform service was less than 31 days or the employee was absent from a position of employment for a period of any length of time for the purpose of an examination to determine his or her fitness for program, the employee must report back to the county later than the beginning of the first. And should that be not later than the beginning of the first regularly scheduled week? And I'll give you this. And then on page 18, I'm sorry, but this is my background, is secretarial and proofreading, so as Luke knows. no employee is permitted to work off the clock, period, that is work without recording the hour, or it's just kind of a run on there. Anyway, I've got those marked. If you want to hand that to Dawn, she can have that.
Okay. Anything else on the employee manual? Okay. Next on the agenda was going to be a closed session to discuss personal performance without needless injury to an individual. They have chosen not to go into closed session. Is that correct, Marlon? So we will do that in an open session, and we will take a 5-minute recess for those that need it. So we'll take that. Marlon, could you louder so it's on the tape that you chose not to go into executive closed session?
Yes, I chose that. Not going.
Okay, and we did talk about it twice yesterday and today, so Okay. Thank you. 5-minute recess, and then we will come back and do this.
Put in your calendar for the 7th.
Okay, we're going to reconvene the Gage County Board of Supervisors. Attendance by observation. Juergens, Dorn, Bauman, Adams, Lytle, Byers, and Setzer. Matt? Just give this to Marlon.
Just so you know what I'm looking for.
Okay.
All right. Step through a timeline here. Marlon, and I give you the papers that I'm going to be looking at here. I didn't make copies for everyone, but I do have one copy. I think I give some to Terry, but I could make that available to everyone. Basically, in the packet, Marlon, there's a page 41 from the employee handbook. I'm going to read it verbatim. Regardless of the reason for your absence, you must notify your supervisor as soon as you know you'll be absent, but no less then 30 minutes before your starting time. You must continue to notify your supervisor each day you're absent. Failure to do so may result in discipline up to and including discharge. If you're unable to call your supervisor, you're responsible for having someone do so for you. And then it goes through, you know, when to call the county, who to report to. That's page 41 of the employee handbook. Page 2 of your job description, highway superintendent position is subject to the personnel guidelines adopted by the County Board of Supervisors as laid out in the Gage County Employee Handbook. So in your job description, which we approved 10-6 of 2010, you are accountable to the Personnel Guidelines Employee Handbook, specifically page 41, where it says if you're going to be gone, you got to notify somebody. Now, timeline of events, very first meeting of Road and Bridge with the new board, January 10th, we had a discussion about notifying somebody on the board, Road and Bridge, if you're going to be on vacation. No conversations came back from you. The next meeting, and I give you a copy of the minutes there, January 24th, there's another discussion. Highway superintendent, all hours of work will go through Road and Bridge Committee. Vacation days need to be approved prior to taking time. Then on 2-7, with the new board, Road and Bridge Committee, you hand us your timesheet here on 2-7, and it shows that January 3rd through the 7th, you were on vacation. You were on vacation January 10th, 11th. You were on vacation 13th and 14th. So in the midst of your vacation, we had a Road and Bridge meeting. You said nothing. After you were instructed, even on the 24th, to run it through Road and Bridge, we were never aware you were on vacation for almost a month. And so at the February 7th meeting, basically we decided, well, we've tried the good guy approach by just telling you twice, so now we're going to have to write it down. So in that meeting, vacation days of two or more consecutive days in the same week need to be approved by the Road and Bridge Committee. Requests for vacation days should be made at least 30 days in advance. So we've got a new board. Let me finish, then I'll visit with you. I'll let you talk. We've got a new board. On December 29th, the chairman of this board told you that the past is the past and we're moving forward. We're working hard to try and communicate, but I guess I'm having difficulty understanding when we make these requests that it's not being followed through. So where's the disconnect, and why do you believe, based on not notifying anyone, that it's okay to not be a part of the employee manual that specifically talks about the days that you're absent, you've got to notify somebody, and it says in your job description? I guess that's the disconnect that we have, and so my recommendation that we were going to do would be to recommend just a written warning is basically what it is, and say, you know, here again, here's a third or fourth step, notified twice verbally, gave you a directive, and then now we're just going to write it and say, here it is. You need to follow the guidelines. It's in your job description that we did back in October. So that's where we wanted to have this discussion as a personnel situation, just with us, but you wanted to make it public. So that's why we're doing this now. So that's where what this is about, basically. So I guess now I would open, what's your side?
Well, on Monday, Road and Bridge, and
Part of my side was, you know, I had more vacation built up than I should have. And then when I got reinstated, I came back to work, and, of course, Galen was at my desk, and his email was on there, and he was the RC. And I said, well, you know, of course, this is new. I've never, in the 7-8 years prior, you know, had to get approval for vacation. You know, after that Monday, you notice it hasn't been two consecutive days. It's just been the next day, and then I came back for board meeting, planning, zoning all day, and then I was gone the day after that, and then I came back for the web conference, which all during the time when I was on vacation, anything that came up, I would go and attend it. So, you know, and in the future, I mean, I'm guessing from January 10 on, if it's 2 days or more, and I wasn't aware of that in the handbook. Of course, all my contracts said I did not follow the handbook. I know the new one says I do. So,
well, I remember when we went out of the contract, I remember, and I believe we could probably pull the record where you said you didn't care if you had a contract or not.
Right.
And the only reason that you have a job description that takes place of the contract is that defines the relationship between the employer and the employee, and it's never meant to be punitive. It just defines that. So we defined it. It's not new, because it may be new in the year in the term of years, but it's not new in the term of months, because we did this back in October, and I know we discussed it in Road and Bridge. We even modified it with some of your suggestions, not all of them, because there's some of the standards that we felt as a board needed to be in there, but you're notifying the board. I don't know of what organization anyone would work for that you could just be gone and not notify the people that you work for. So I guess, you know, again, the goal was just to give you a written warning and say, yeah, you shouldn't have done this. You did it.
I agree. You know, I'll let you know from now on.
Marlon, what troubles me is we sat here with a new board January 10th, and I clearly stated you've earned your vacation. No one's denying you the right to take it. We need to know when you're off. Terry, Myron, Matt, and I were sitting there, and you walk out of that meeting and you went on vacation. You never said a word. You never indicated that you were, we just told you we needed notified, and you walked out of that meeting and you went on vacation for basically 4 days after that. It troubles me that we tried to let you know this is our expectations, what we expect. The communication is where we're failing here. We've got to improve on our communication to ever go forward. Well, and we're not here to be punitive. We're here to get an understanding. We have expectations, and we're going to demand that they're met anymore. And accountability is something we as a body, if we don't request that accountability out of the people, out of everything we do, we should not be here.
I want to ask the question, Marlon, why didn't you tell the board you were going on vacation?
I guess, you know, just...
You just had a meeting that you went over it. It was very clear. And why didn't you tell me?
And I remember hearing the two or more consecutive days several times. I don't, you know, that's what I'm planning on doing. It, but, you know, but 30 days ahead of time, in the handbook it says 30 minutes before your starting time. And I heard that several times on the 10th was more than 2 days, so.
Well, two or more is, you've displayed that, two or more, you
right.
know, so. It's a written warning, Marlon, is what it is. And you've acknowledged that you need to improve on it.
Mm-hmm.
We need a motion to put the written warning on permanent record.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Committee reports.
Building grounds, Matt, and I think
Thank
we
you, Marlon.
Covered most of it in the regular meeting, but... Still doing the punch list to do the review of everything that has to be wrapped up, and Wim and Dave are doing that. We talked about the north windows and dealt with that this morning. The elevator maintenance agreement is a five-year agreement, which is $176 monthly or $2,112 a year. If we just want the inspection, we can get by for $924. But if there's any problem, and we've already run into one that could be what the warranty kicked in, fortunately, to take care of a problem. And the committee felt that the 176 monthly, the 2112 a year, would cover us with damages and any kind of problems that we would have. And this is a five-year agreement. So it was recommended that we go into this agreement. But Dave is getting a contract. He's getting the information from the elevator company, so we'll have it presented at a later date. But that'll give you something to contemplate. And I think basically that's what we considered. Matt, anything else? Matt did go over our budget and went over the dollars that we have and what we spent and what we have left. And you want to?
Well, we pulled the turnip out and we squeezed it every which way we could, and we tried to figure out would it be a better deal to spend twice as much or save twice as much. And I think for the elevator, Denny just, you know, I think we just decided it was probably money well spent. And you know, it's Murphy's Law. It's never going to go down on a day when nobody's here. It'll never go down on President's Day. It'll go down on Tuesday when you got a room full or a court full of people. And then we also discussed, too, we do have that emergency chair, but then you got to have an employee drag that chair with a person in it up the stairs if they need to get to another floor. And we've done that, and that's not a good thing. So it's probably one of those cost of doing business type things. And so,
Danny, I just Dave dropped off a copy of the contract from our office to review, and we'll be doing that and getting back to you.
Good. Thank you, Counselor.
What else, Denny?
That's it.
Any other committee reports?
Do you want me to speak anything to the courthouse renovation or
Terry, and then you guys can decide. Terry, go ahead.
Okay. Basically, at the Road and Bridge Committee, one big thing we discussed possibly combining some motor grader routes. Discussions there, I think maybe that can be done in the future. Talked about letting bids on the gravel. An update on the bathroom at Philly. I think that's going to be done shortly. And March 2nd, there'll be a meeting with the Road and Bridge employees at Valentino's. We discussed that, so that's it.
And March 3rd is with the township.
Yeah.
Boards out at the extension office, and that's,
yes,
that's a public open meeting, so
that's
anybody
at 7
who
o'clock.
Wants to, yeah, at 7 o'clock.
Yep.
With all the townships.
We did have to back up a little bit. Matt has the report on the funds, the finances on the bond issue and building grounds.
I'll plug the Beatrice Daily Sun here. Luke called me last week and wanted to kind of get an update of where the project had been money wise, how much we'd spent, and I don't know, when Ron left, he gave a lot of information to a lot of people, and I purged some of it because I thought some of it was redundant, and they're kind of his notes, and some of it I wish I'd have kept because I think it was more information. But I kind of made a little folder here to give the historical perspective back, and I think it was 08, I believe, when the project was initially approved and discussed. And initially the project was, I believe, according here, was $8.8 million. It was cut back to $4.7 projected, but the board at that point recognized, you know, that's the ouch factor. The public's not going to allow that type of bond money. So that's, I think, how they got down to the 2.8. So when that was passed, the 2.8 was the bond money. But also there was a intent to use inheritance money, non-property tax money, as part of the funding mechanism. And I believe the project initially was supposed to be a 3.5, almost a 4-year project. So here we are. Are we 2 years? Just over 2 years? Or right at 2 years?
It'll be 2 years this May.
Okay, so we're just, you know, it's I guess the project is just ongoing. We'll always have to budget a little bit once the initial renovation is done, so to speak. Having conversations and knowing how we budgeted and finances, I was here for that period of time, is Over the two-year period, we budgeted roughly $1.2 million to be used out of inheritance. And so far, and this was 2.9 were the numbers I compiled, we've used just about $1.3 million. Now, the concerning thing is you look this year, we budgeted $500,000 and we spent $965,000 out of inheritance. And you say, oh my goodness, what the heck happened? Go back to the previous fiscal year, we budgeted $700,000, we used $331,000 because we knew it was going to be over a two-year period, so we knew that that was going to be the cost. There's also building and grounds dollars, roughly $60,000 that were budgeted over a period of 2 years, and we've spent about $42,000. So where the nuts and bolts are, the perspective or the projection over 2 years, we budgeted just over $4 million. And thus far, we've spent $4.139 million, roughly. Now remember that the roof that had hail damage in 2006, there was $305,000 that came back. And there was also the energy block grant we've used for the windows, which was $98,000. So if you look at, say, $4.1 million and take off $400,000, we're actually under what we projected to spend over 2 years. Now, I hesitate to say only and hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars in the same sentence. They're polar opposites. But I think that there was a recognition, which I believe was very appropriate, to limit the amount of property tax dollars that are being used to renovate this facility. The current budget, the current amount in from 2017 in the inheritance fund balance, which I got from the treasurer's office, was $1,005.54. Now, that's a great fund, and even the state legislature is looking at that. So I think that shows that if you spend the money responsibly and you use it appropriately and you use it as a safe harbor, that will build itself back up. There was a point this year, I think, was inheritance down to $300,000 or $400,000? So, I mean, there was an ouch factor for us, and that's, I think if we could go back and pull the minutes, we kind of pulled everything in and said, whoa, let's hold back here a little bit. So I guess, you know, kind of to summarize here, we budgeted about $4 million. Current expenditures, you can make an argument, probably right at $4 million. Are there going to be more dollars coming in? Yes. Is the project going to continue? You know, we've still got to fix the grounds out there. You know, we've got a lot of folks in town that want to see that. You know, they may not come in here very much, but they drive by. So we're going to need to do some work on that in the spring. The inheritance fund, again, is up to $1 million. And I would say that inheritance fund can be used for other things as well. Last year we dipped into just under $400,000 to help out to fund for the storm. We bought what I call snow insurance, which was that snow blower. So we've used that for other things, and that's a great resource outside of property tax money, property tax revenue. These are dollars that come back to the county. So is $4 million a lot of money? Absolutely. You bet $4 million is a lot of money. But if you spread that out over 50 years, it's about $80,000 a year that we put into this building. So, you know, that's the perspective, and I think that's something that, not to throw it into anyone's face, just keep people abreast that it does cost a little money. We're going to need to continue to do this. Finance Committee has talked very briefly, as well as with Building and Grounds, about setting up a building fund and start to fund that. We've done that with the Emergency Road and Bridge Fund. We've done that with insurance. It's good to fund these little savings accounts so that if you need these projects, hopefully you can stay out of some of these bond issues. And that's, again, looking forward and trying to plan for the future. So it's a wonderful building. I've talked to a lot of people who've been very critical of the board and me personally over what we've done to this facility, and then I've talked to them after they've walked into it. They kind of see that it was money well spent. It's always $4 million price tag is expensive, but I think that there's an understanding now that it needed it, and there's a level of appreciation. So,
thank you, Matt. Appreciate the Finance Committee's cooperation working with Building and Grounds. It really helps us know where we're at. So thank you.
Any other committee reports? If not, the sheriff would like to address us.
Good morning. I apologize. I didn't get a chance to meet with my committee this week. I didn't too many things on the plate, and these came up recently, and I just thought I'd better let you be aware of it now instead of waiting two more weeks. I've had some people ask me, even a couple of media have asked about the spike. I've had people watching the website. We've gone almost to 40 people in jail, and they're wondering if there's something for any reason for it. Not really. There isn't. We've had to farm some people out to some different counties. I think we're down to 32 two or four right now. But our magic number, as the old board knows, and the new ones probably don't, is through the bond process in jail, it was recommended that we stay at 26. That gives room to three or four more cells for fresh arrests. So for classification purposes, so the board voted to do that, and we did that during that process. So there's nothing really that's made a difference. We've still had some arrest warrants out there, two or three at a time, and just fresh arrests, just one of those spikes. You know, it'll probably go down, it'll probably go back up. It could have been as nice warm weather, and people are tired of being around the house all the time. So nothing out of the ordinary there. The other thing that was of a major concern to me, I was just talking to Rex earlier here at break, I just got notified on this yesterday. DEA is the acronym for the Drug Enforcement Administration. You probably all heard that. And, of course, as you all know, Fed's on the way down. They're starting to cut corners. And one of the things they've done is the funding that when we go out and we get a meth lab site, I happen to have two lab technicians trained to a certain level. Once they're out there, if they can clean it up, they will. And it's done at our cost. There's not a lot there. If it reaches that level where there might be a large volume of product or liquid, whatever the case may be, then it rises to a higher level and I have to bring in outside sources. And, of course, that was funded through money from the feds. They've informed us as of this week that money has run out, and they don't like it, but unfortunately it's a trickle-down effect. And always we'll keep working on to where the money can come from. But right now, if we get a lab, my understanding is that resource is not there at a higher level as far as funding. It's going to be at right here at the county's level. And I can tell you it's thousands of dollars, depending on how much we have to clean up, I imagine. So I just wanted to let the board know about in advance. Most of the labs we can take care of ourselves because they're usually dump sites. But obviously, if it's an active lab and there's a lot of product there, then we have to bring in the people that have the more experience and the equipment to do that, and that's where it's going to run into problems for me. So hopefully 98% of the labs we'll be able to do ourselves, but it'll be one or two that's going to really kick us, I'm afraid. So it's a trickle-down effect, and I'm sure it's just one of many that we're going to start bleeding on, but I just wanted to let you be aware of it.
I'd like to make a comment, and I have before, and I hope that you followed through, and if you haven't, you should. It was very apparent, front page news, that the Attorney General turned down over $400,000 from the feds that was drug money coming down to assist us in the state of Nebraska in these issues because of a political philosophy that he thinks that's big government. And we need that money so badly. We need to let the Attorney General know, the governor know, our state legislators know, that this is just unacceptable, sending back almost $500,000 to the feds given to us to deal with these issues. And I've talked to Chief Lang about this also, and is in the same situation. But I have to harp on this because as far as I'm concerned, it's totally unacceptable. Those dollars will go somewhere else to some other state, someplace. We won't have them. And we're going to suffer. We're going to have our citizens that are going to be affected. We're going to have more crime. We're going to have more people in that jail. The legislature and the governor has recommended taking away our funding now and then this. So I just wanted to make that point.
I agree. I'm taking care of that. One voice, anyway.
Thank you.
Yes, any idea what a cost would be for an average? I mean, they all vary, I'm sure, but...
Well, had I had more notice on this, I could have figured this for you, Myron. My lab technician, one of them, just quote off the top of his head, depending on how much is there, but I was thinking, don't quote me, but I was thinking he says $3,000-$5,000 would be an average, I'm thinking, in that area. And it could go up as high as 10, probably. You know, it depends on the situation. So, yeah. Like I say, you don't have many, but at that rate, it doesn't take a lot when you've got pretty tight budgets. So,
Matt, is there anything that the public can do of early notification if you see suspicious activity? Is there anything that being preemptive, and if you just see something that doesn't look right, or you see a group of people, is there anything that keeps the cost down as far as stopping this before it even gets out of hand?
Well, a few things we've done is one of my technicians has been very active the last few years on going around to first responders, fire departments, rescue squads, training on that. He met, I think, for second or third time in the last couple of years with the road graders at the annual, some training for Marlin down there to keep an eye out for the ditches, what they're looking for. And then we started, it was last year when at Rex, we started going to the annual township meeting. And this year, we're going to have a half-hour block that Marlon set aside for me. I'm going to have him talk to him about that as well. So we're trying to get the word out to as much as we can. The key is do not approach it, because it might look just like some trash, you and me, but it can be a pretty nasty situation. So we're getting the word out to it. And, you know, just like everything else, the labs come up for a while, and then it just levels off, then we go back down and some more. It just kind of peaks and valleys, but it's a concern, because even if you are on the downside of them, the cost to take care of them, if it's beyond our level of training, is not good. So, do what we can.
Anything else for Gus?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Any other committee reports? Anything else for the good of the order? Board of Supervisors adjourned at 10:35.